The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com.
You're listening to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
We're working like heck.
Drive underway here on Fox Sports Knoxville, live this afternoon at one of our favorite places, Old Ben Franklin Motors, on a scorcher of a Wednesday afternoon, last Wednesday of the month. Ladies and gentlemen, we are getting ready for the hands-free cell phone law that goes into effect next week. Are you ready for that, Trey Wallace?
No, I'm not ready for it.
You've got a hands-free device, don't you?
I know I do, but still, I'm not ready for it.
You're ready. Like, here's my dilemma right now. My wife got me one of those, like, dashboard mounts.
Did she really?
And, yeah, she says, like, I can put my phone there and just conduct, like, because I'm always on my phone when I'm driving.
Okay.
And she says that I can just, like, do speakerphone calls.
You can. It's called Bluetooth.
Well, that's going to be really loud, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it's going to take the car up, but you know what you need to do? When
the earpiece.
You need to get an earpiece. I have, like, these Beats, but they're the wireless ones.
Yeah.
So if I'm driving, I just throw them in, and I can talk through those.
That's what I'm thinking about doing.
I'm scared for you, bro, to be honest with you.
I mean, I'm scared for myself.
You're on the phone a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
we're in the business.
You know, you just, I feel unproductive if I'm just driving there. You know, sometimes I'm listening to podcasts, music, or, you know, sports radio or something. But oftentimes I'm talking to somebody, man. I just feel more productive that way.
No, they keep sending out these darn alerts. It's going on Monday. It starts Monday.
It's going to be a big adjustment for a lot of people, and it's like $200 fines if you don't do it. Like,
I think they're giving breaks. Like, they, for the
no,
first week
I don't know.
Two.
I think they're gonna use it as a huge revenue source. Did you see where in Georgia last week they had a trap set up? They had police officers.
No.
Yes, disguised as utility workers. They had like the orange vests, and they're standing next to the cones, like they're doing road work or something, and they're watching for the people who are looking at their cell phones. And then they radio ahead to the police who are a mile or two down the road, and then they pull over the cars.
Stop it. Are they going to be doing that crap?
That's what they're doing in Georgia.
Like, but you can sneak it by. Like,
you feel like that's entrapment? No, they know. They know if you're looking. I mean, we all think, like, if you ever watch.
How am I going to change my iTunes? How am I going to pick a song? They not take these guys. Okay, the first time I see a cop riding down the road and he's on his cell phone, I'm going to take a picture of him and make some kind of citizen's ticket and leave it on his car. You can just pay me through PayPal for your mistake.
Yeah, I think it's going to affect a lot of people. I think they're going to write a lot of tickets. And it's, hey man, it's probably the right thing to do, because if you drive down the interstate.
I've been hit before by somebody.
You've been hit by somebody looking at their phone?
Yes.
Like, it amazes me, and listen, I do it too. Like, I'm not trying to come off holier than thou, man. I sneak peeks all the time. You know, when you shouldn't be looking at it, and it's very dangerous, and people are dying because of it. But it's amazing. You drive down I-40 and you look at
either side around you.
And there are every other car. It seems the person is holding their phone in their hand, looking down at it on the interstate.
That's what I just stare
miles
at them.
An hour.
I just stare at them. Like, I'll get up beside them, not for long, because they can make a weird turn or something like that when they're on their phone. But I'll just stare them down if they're on their phone. But I take in, for instance, I got to be able to swipe over and answer a call. I got to be able to change my music. They need to come up with some app that, well, probably already has an app, says, hey, play this song. There's tricky marks. And you know what it is? It's almost like you ride down the interstate. Like, I've gotten so used to interstate now, 40 to Nashville, where I know where all the little secret spots are where the police can chill out.
Oh, yeah, you
got
to be careful. They'll get you.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things.
Well.
Unmarked cars like crazy. Just
I guess it's probably a good thing, man. I mean, we got along just fine driving cars for about 100 years or something
before cell phones became the norm. Like, it's probably for the best to go back, but it's going to be a major adjustment for a lot of people, myself included.
$200 fines?
Yep.
Good Lord. That's worse than a speeding ticket.
Fines up to $200.
Okay.
You can one touch allowed to answer or end a call.
Okay, good.
Bluetooth and earpieces are allowed.
Okay, all right.
Phone mounts considered acceptable, and you are allowed to call 911.
Well, I can just tell them I was calling 911 every day. Every time I get pulled over, I'll just dial 911.
Well, they'll want to see your phone, dude.
I'll literally, if a cop pulls behind me, I'll call 911.
You'll just call 911?
Yeah.
And your emergency is, I'm about to get a $200 ticket?
No, something's going on. I got stung by a bee in the car.
Wow, that's a level of lying that it's hard to get to.
You ever been stung by a bee driving down the road?
No.
Damn thing hurts. Freak me out.
Imagine it would hurt just about anywhere, whether you're driving or not.
Freak me out. I just got stung right on the leg.
All right, folks, we got a big show this afternoon. Coming up here in just a few minutes, Kelly Harper, new Lady Vols head coach, is going to join us, make her drive debut on the show today. Our friend Aaron Torres is going to stop by this afternoon. We want you to stop by. We're at 9711 Kingston Pike, Old Ben Franklin Motors, where we are. We're right across the street from the Chop House, and the folks here at Old Ben Franklin Motors are itching to make a deal today. It's a beautiful day to come on out and take a test drive. If you are looking for a truck, let me tell you, man, we got over 50 pre-owned trucks on the lot right now just waiting for you. I'm talking Fords, Chevys, Toyota, Dodge. We got them all. Four-wheel drive. We've got 10 diesel trucks to choose from. Come on down. Take a look. We've got everything right now at Old Ben Franklin Motors. We've got an 07 Toyota Tundra Crew Max, four-wheel drive, $12,421. That is a great truck. How about this for some of the more rarer finds? More rare? Not rarer.
That was pretty good, buddy.
1993 Ford Ranger, runs perfect, drives perfect, ice cold air. Check out this price, $2,421.
I'd buy that, actually.
$2,400 for a Ford Ranger. We've got a 94 Ford F-150, the 7.5 liter. People look for these things. 94 Ford F-150 with a 7.5 liter engine, $2,821. And, of course, we have a ton of new Mitsubishis on the lot. Yes, new Mitsubishis, $4,500 back on all of the new Mitsubishis here at Old Ben Franklin Motors. Come on out. Take a test drive this afternoon. While you're here, we will hook you up. I want to thank Jets Pizza for sending some food down here this afternoon. Jets Pizza and Farragut coming through in the clutch again. You want to go see a Smokies game like I did this past weekend? Take yourself a nining vacation. Shout out to T. Carp and his lovely wife. They were down here waiting on me when I pulled up. They got some Smokies tickets. Going to take the kids out to a ball game. But I'm not sure if they're in town this weekend, but obviously they've got another month or two of that season. So these are flex tickets, get you into any Tennessee Smokies home game. Come on down, and we should be able to hook you up here this afternoon at Old Ben Franklin Motors. And as always, Backyard Burgers, we've got coupons. Free Backyard Burgers here. This gets you a free third-pound burger with the purchase of any combo. So we'll get your burger for free. Swing on by. 9711 Kingston Pike, ladies and gentlemen, in beautiful West Knoxville. Come get hooked up this afternoon at Old Ben Franklin Motors. All right, jumping right into it. By the way, Haynes King, I understand, is set to make his decision today. This is the other quarterback.
Today's the day? I thought it was tomorrow. Man.
I think it's today.
Okay.
He's choosing between Tennessee and Texas A&M, and I don't think anybody has a real feel for it. Shout out to these dudes, Haynes King, Kerry Blackshear Jr.
Yep.
These recruitments usually leak, right? Usually know where they're going to go before they make their quote-unquote official announcement. These things aren't leaking.
No, they're keeping it secret. They're playing it the smart way. I even called Comcast last night to try to figure out what in the world's going on with Blackshear. So I'm just, it's either Florida, Virginia Tech, Tennessee, Duke, North Carolina, Gulf Coast Community College.
Yeah, I see some Tennessee fans freaking out about both Haynes King and Kerry Blackshear on the, and I don't know, man. I don't know where either of these guys are going to go.
Does it really matter to you about Haynes? Let me ask you something. And this is kind of a hard-nosed question, but with Haynes King, man, I mean, you've already got Harrison Bailey. You've already got JT Shroud on campus. You've already got Brian Maurer. Is it the end all be all if you don't get a kid like Haynes King? I mean, even though it's Jim Chaney's boy.
Yeah, it depends on how
they spin it.
Yeah, it depends on how it works out.
I agree.
Mean, it sounds like King is a little bit more slender, a little bit more, got a little more Johnny football to him, can break, when the play breaks down, he can scramble around, make a throw. But
he's
Bailey,
about his size. Yeah.
You look at Bailey, I mean, he's already, 6'2", 200, over 200 pounds. I mean, he looks like an SEC quarterback now. He's big,
agreed,
sturdy, got a cannon, can make all the throws.
It just wouldn't surprise me if he went the A&M route. And I don't blame him if he does. He's a Texas kid.
Yeah,
you want to stay home or you want to go to Knoxville?
I'm trying to think. If we had any quarterbacks
Worley
out
came
of
out
Texas,
of Texas.
Worley's from South Carolina.
No, I'm sorry. Worley's playing in Texas. No, not – God. Not Worley.
Nick Stevens. Nick Stevens was from Flower Mound.
Our quarterback from last year. Dang it. Lost my mind. He went and played at Lamar. Oh, man. Come on now. Help me out, dude.
Garantano?
No, the other quarterback.
The kid from Stanford? Keller Crist?
No, the other quarterback.
I think those are the only two
Will
that
McBride.
Played last year. Will McBride.
Will
he was
McBride.
From Texas.
He is now
he
Lamar. Thank you. Goodness gracious. Yes. Okay. I thought I was losing my – I did say McBride.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Okay. You're correct. Will McBride. Where have you gone, Will McBride? We've already forgotten here in Knoxville.
He played good in that Missouri game.
He did. He got –
He got drilled, but
yeah, there's no way you can convince me that he wasn't playing concussed.
No, he was hurting.
I mean, he was seeing stars out there.
Yeah.
Like you could, I hate to go all Dr. Bear on you here, but I mean,
he got hit.
He got hit in the face and the face mask. It was he was the only scholarship quarterback at that point, and they left him out there.
Who was the third? Was it Sharon Jones? Was he the other quarterback on the roster that would have played, or was he at Colorado at the time before he signed?
Sherrieron Jones.
Yeah, him too.
I don't know. I don't remember. I've tried to block a lot of those memories out.
Well, he was a good motivator on the sideline.
So we'll keep an eye out for what Haynes King decides to do.
Maybe Blackshear announces.
Maybe
the show.
Maybe Blackshear announces. Maybe that thing drags on for another couple of days. The other big news in the NCAA world going on today is the transfer rules are evidently getting set to change, and this could be pretty controversial, actually. NCAA D1 Council approved a package of updated guidelines today that could make it more difficult for college football and basketball players who transfer to receive immediate eligibility waivers. Now, of course, there's been a transfer, I don't want to say epidemic because that makes it sound like a bad thing. I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing for the kids to be able to move freely at least once in their careers. But there's been way more transfers than there have ever been this offseason. And you've had a lot of guys already, Justin Fields transferring from Georgia to Ohio State, Tate Martell going from Ohio State to Miami, have quickly gotten eligible immediately.
Let's go back to the Shea Patterson and Van Jefferson.
Yeah, they didn't have to wait out. Now, they go from Ole Miss where the school's on probation. That's a rule. Maybe that's a little bit of a different case. But here's the thing for Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt right now is they're waiting on. We've talked about it extensively this summer. Aubrey Solomon, D'Angelo Gibbs. They're waiting, trying to get waivers for both of those guys.
This doesn't help Gibbs' case.
Rick Barnes is hoping to get a waiver for Uroš Plavšić.
I think it would help in this case.
If you're Tennessee, anybody, take Tennessee out of it because people say we're looking at orange colored glasses. If you are South Carolina, if you are Texas Tech, if you are Utah, and you've got a transfer coming in and you're hoping to get the immediate eligibility waiver, I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, you gave these guys the favorable ruling.
Right.
The guy who went to Ohio State, the guy who went to Miami. You gave them the benefit of the doubt, the quick ruling, immediate eligibility. And then you change the rule before you make the decision on my player? In what world is that fair? Now, I don't know when the decision goes into. Maybe this is a thing where they say, listen, starting next year, starting after the 2019-2020 school year. To me, okay, we can talk. That would be fair.
Right.
But if they say, if this ends up costing Aubrey Solomon immediate eligibility this season, if I'm Jeremy Pruitt, if I'm Philip Fulmer, I am raising hell about that right now, because I don't sound like a three-year-old, but it ain't fair.
No, it's not. But also, look, if Tennessee can get one out of two, they're in a good spot. I didn't think Gibbs had a good case to begin with. I thought Aubrey Solomon, he's got some family things going on. Gibbs can't really make that argument. I think it's documented enough why he left Georgia. But you look around the country and you look at guys, you know, you look at Justin Fields, you look at Tate Martell. You know, an example of one that got shot down was, what was his name, Luke Ford, the tight end from Georgia who transferred to Illinois. He got declined last week to be able to have immediate eligibility. I think it's something they're going to have to take a look at, and I'm interested now to see what the process – and here's the thing too, Russ. We don't know, like, the process, man. All we know is that some of these kids have went out and hired these big-time attorneys to help them out, and they get eligible, and the other kids are sitting around waiting.
That's fine. More power to them. All I'm saying is, and listen, the rule has to be the same across the board. If you want to argue, you know, hey, you should have one transfer or without having to sit out a year, or if you graduate, you should be able to graduate transfer without having to sit out a year, which is what the rule has basically been. That's fine. But the rule has to be uniform across the board for all schools. You can't change it midstream. It can't go into effect right now. If it goes into effect at the end of next season for guys that, you know, nobody knows they're going to transfer in 2020 right now, but it's going to happen.
Agreed.
If it goes into effect next spring, after next spring semester, that's one thing. But if you're telling me this is going through right now and that this is going to negatively impact Aubrey Solomon, D'Angelo Gibbs, and the hundreds of other transfers that are waiting right now across the country at other schools to see if they are going to be eligible immediately, well, I got a big problem with that.
I think the number is 323 transfers out of the over 1,200 kids that are in the portal right now.
I mean, if a kid has anything close approaching a semblance of a reason for getting closer to home or anything like that, you better go ahead and grant him his eligibility. Do what you want to do with the rules next year, but you can't make up the rules as you go and change them midstream after you've already given a benefit to several other schools, including some that, well, not on Tennessee's schedule, but certainly in the ACC and the Big Ten. Those teams have already had a huge positive impact by getting those players eligible immediately. There's no reason that Tennessee or any other school should be playing at a competitive disadvantage just because the NCAA took a couple of months to make up their mind.
I think the one transfer rule per career, one free transfer rule per career is something that you can look at. That's just my opinion. That's how I feel. I think that these young men should get one chance to go somewhere else if their grades are aligned, if everything is satisfactory when it comes to, you know, no history of anything dumb. You know, the academics at a C standard, whatever the standard is to transfer, get one opportunity to go to a different school. That's it. If you try to transfer to another one, okay, you're sitting out a year, period, straight up, and it's going to cost you towards your eligibility. But I think that the times are changing so much now. And also, if you read a couple of these articles, man, it's interesting. Like the language in there, like talking about, you know, if coaches – and I'm paraphrasing here, but if coaches do you wrong or there's something going on in the coaching staff, you can prove. I mean, you're going to have kids walking in here, you know, to some head coach's office with some, you know, recorder trying to get them to say something and them being able to get out and transfer. So I look at this as a very big deal for what the NCAA and their, I don't know if I want to call it propaganda, but whatever they're trying to spew towards the university and schools. And I find this interesting to see where we go now, because there are a bunch of kids out there that are looking for spots, and I know that immediate transferability is so big for a certain amount of these that I would hate to see a rule go into place today and it start infecting a kid, you know, like Monday.
Monday. Whatever the rule is, it needs to be – if you're going to change it drastically, you do it next year, man. You can't do it right now. That would be a terrible – disservice
after
to
signing day,
all these kids who are waiting to hear back from the NCAA right now. All right, quick timeout. When we continue, new Lady Ball coach Kelly Harper is going to jump on the show with us. We'll talk to her about what the transition has been like coming from Missouri State back home to coach the Lady Vols. Stay with us. We're live today. Old Ben Franklin Motors just getting started here on The Drive. Back with more right after this. Sports Knoxville. We're pleased to be joined by the new head coach of the Tennessee Lady Vol basketball program, Kelly Harper. Coach, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for jumping on with us today. Has that sunk in yet, being called the new coach of the Lady Vols?
You know, it's it's pretty cool. It's definitely growing on me. I have I've enjoyed my time, and every now and then I'll have a few moments where, you know, you just sit back and you know, have a moment where you're just reflecting on the gravity of the position and really where you're at.
Oh, there's a lot of gravity there. I mean, have you settled in? It seems like it's been a whirlwind couple of months for you.
It really was. I've done this transition thing. So this is my fourth head coaching job, and I understand when you take a position there, you're just trying to play catch up, and you're just going as hard as you can. And I get that. I understand it is a whirlwind. The thing that has made this settle down a little bit was actually being able to get on the court with our team and get out there and practice with them. That makes it feel like you're actually moving forward rather than trying to play catch up.
You, of course, from Tennessee, played on some great teams in the 1990s. Was Tennessee your dream job when you got into coaching?
You know, it wasn't, and I'll tell you why. When I don't think anybody, but especially people that grow up here, and even more of a case for people that played here, this job was Pat's job. And you know, we have, I think everyone just assumed she was going to coach here and be here forever. And you know, after that, obviously this was Holly's job, and it wasn't anything that. That I thought, oh, that's my dream job. It really wasn't. It became my dream job when Coach Fulmer called me and asked me about my interest in the position. And then when I started thinking about what I would do and how I'd want to run things, it did become my dream job at that moment.
What was that interview process like for you? Did you feel like you had a decent shot at the job from the get-go?
You know, I didn't know. I really did not know. And I knew that they were going to interview multiple people. Don't even know who all that was. But, you know, I knew that I was going in it with a lot of passion and, you know, some understanding of the position. You know, you go through, you're interviewing, and the more I interview, the more I get asked about it, the more excited I get about it. And so, you know, after the process goes, before I got that final phone call, I really wanted the position. I really wanted to be here. But I really did not know exactly what was going to happen and how they were going to go, which direction they were going to go. And so when I got that call, I knew this call was going to be the call that I found something out. I knew it was either going to be yes or no. So, you know, I was by myself and got to hear from Coach Fulmer that they chose me. And I knew in that moment it was a special moment, and just kind of took it all in those brief 10 seconds, because I knew the next 2 months I was not going to be able to.
Yeah, the calm before the storm, huh?
Right.
So
that you get the interview process and you go through that and you get your hopes up, you want the job, but you know they're interviewing other people too. How nerve-wracking is that time period between the interview and when you get that call from Coach Fulmer offering you the job?
Well, I tell you what, and it was not nerve-wracking for me because I was in an absolute wonderful situation at Missouri State. I had a great team returning off a Sweet 16 performance. The administration at Missouri State was unbelievably supportive of me and our staff, our family, and our team. So if they had decided to go a different direction, I was still in a great position. So because of that, it wasn't a nerve-wracking situation. I did want the job. I really wanted the job. I wanted this opportunity. But it wasn't like it was my second choice was not a bad situation.
Sure. Did you always want to be a coach growing up, or was that something that kind of came into your life as your playing career was coming to an end?
No, I knew. I think it was about my sophomore year of high school, I decided that I wanted to coach. I thought I wanted to coach in high school at that time. My dad was in education, and he was a former high school basketball coach. My brother played, my mom played. I mean, everybody played in our family. It just made sense. So I came to the University of Tennessee, majored in math, minored in secondary education because I was going to be a math teacher and coach basketball. And about halfway through my college career, I remember coming in and telling Pat, hey, I really think I want to try this college coaching thing. I loved high school basketball. That's why I wanted to be part of it. And then I got here and the same thing happened. I loved college basketball and again, wanted to stay a part of it.
You mentioned you've been a head coach. This is your fourth head coaching job. Your first foray into, you know, the Power Five ranks at NC State didn't end the way I'm sure you wanted it to. What did you learn from that experience that makes you a stronger coach this time around?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think any experience that you have, both positive and negative, it's learning. I mean, I am a much better basketball coach now than I was 5 years ago, to be honest with you. I think you just learn from every experience. And, you know, you just kind of catalog some things in the back of your mind or on notepads. And, you know, this worked here. Let's try it again. This didn't work here. Let's not do that again. And, you know, you learn and the game changes and the landscape in terms of recruiting changes and you have to adjust and figure out what's going to work for you. I've worked with some terrific administrators. I've worked with some terrific assistant coaches, and you know, just feel really good about the lessons learned. And you know, I have a lot of confidence coming in here right now with our ability to be able to get this program to be successful at an elite level.
How difficult was that when the NC State gig doesn't work out? Is there a feeling of uncertainty as far as, you know, maybe this is your one shot at the quote-unquote big time? Who knows if you'll ever be back, if you'll ever get another opportunity like that again?
No. I didn't have that that feeling of, oh, that was my shot at the BCS level. I really didn't have that feeling. And I didn't know, you know, I have the meeting where they let me know what direction they're going to go. I didn't know what was going to happen next. Had no idea. You know, I honestly thought I was probably going to be sitting in my pajamas for 2 weeks. I didn't, you know, I just didn't know what was going to happen. The very next morning by 6 a.m. I had a call from an AD. And within 24 hours, I had 5 more calls. So I realized then pretty quickly I was going to have opportunities. And very fortunate to have Missouri State come across there, and that was, like I said earlier, just a terrific situation. And you know, it's not about, oh, I've got to get to the BCS level. That's not what it's about. It's about being the best coach that you can be at the right fit in the right place. And you know, I feel like I've been able to find a lot of really good fits for me, and I just can't imagine one being better than the University of Tennessee.
Talking with Tennessee Lady Vols head coach Kelly Harper this afternoon here on the show. Coach, now that you've had time to analyze your new roster here at Tennessee, make a few changes, and lead a few workouts, What's your overall diagnosis of where the program sits at right now today?
Well, we have been really pleased with their effort and their focus and their willingness to do what we ask them to do. We're going to, you know, we'll have some challenges. Obviously, all teams do. And I think one of our big things is, you know, being able to handle adversity as it comes at us. I think that'll be a challenge for us, as it is for most programs. But I'm really excited about this group. They have been, like I said, they've been very willing. I think they want to do well. They want to do it right. And for us, everybody, every coach does things differently. You know, even the top, most successful coaches in history do things differently from one another. And so as we present our program and what we want it to look like, they're learning what that is. They're learning what we want them to do and how we want them to be and how it needs to look. And so as we, you know, every day we're growing in that area, and I'm proud of them. I'm proud of how they've been. We still have a lot to do. You know, you don't get it all in 2 months, but, you know, I think it's exciting times for us for sure.
You mentioned that growing up, this was Pat's program, and obviously coaching the Lady Vols, there's always going to be the legacy of Pat Summitt that permeates everything about that program. How do you, as one of her former players, both embrace that legacy but also carve out your own niche and your own personality as a coach?
Well, I think, first of all, it's easy to embrace her here. You know, we have a statue, we have murals, we talk about her there. Literally in my office, I've got a signed basketball, I've got books, I've got programs, posters, I've got all kinds of things sitting in my office. You know, she's not too far away wherever you look. That's also just really important to me. I'll reference her often with our team. You know, Pat said this, and just not because I'm here, that's because I would do that anywhere I was at. That was a big part of my upbringing as a basketball player. But I think for me, I'm completely okay with that. I loved her and understand the impact that she had on me, but also on this program and all of women's basketball. I am completely confident coming to work every day and not worrying about being under a shadow. It's not a shadow. There's a big statue there, but I don't feel like I'm trying to live up to her. I'm not trying to be her. I'm just trying to be me and do the best me that I can be. So I feel really good about it. You know, and I understand people make comparisons. I get that.
Sure.
You know, I understand that's going to happen. But that's not something I'm doing. I'm not in here saying, oh, Pat won these national championships. That's what I have to do. It's not that approach for me at all. So I think that helps. And when you're so appreciative and you love someone and you put them on a pedestal, it's okay to talk about them every single day.
New coaches always are talking about changing the culture when they first get to a new job. Are you trying to change the culture back to what it was under Coach Summitt when the program was so dominant, or are you trying to more create an entirely new culture for a new generation of players?
Well, that's such an interesting, quote. People talk about changing the culture. I think, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do, I'm not really worried about what happened before. I'm not trying to say things were done wrong or bad. That's not what this is about. This is about right now, what are we going to do moving forward? So it's not necessarily changing the culture, it's establishing our culture. It's establishing what we want it to look like and what we believe it needs to be. So for us, yes, a big part of any coach's transition is establishing their culture. And for us, you know, that means you approach everything with a winner's mentality. You're doing things right. You give effort. You're tough. You're competitive. You're respectful. I think it's just all of that. And I think the way that we want things to look, I think, will be very classic Tennessee Lady Vols.
Coach, what are your thoughts on getting that UConn series started again? I know that's a situation you kind of inherited, but it's, of course, a rivalry that really defined the entire sport for so many years. Gino Auriemma, as only he can, already added a little spark to the series, saying that playing Tennessee is just like playing anybody else, or whatever he said a couple of weeks ago. Are you ready to resume that series?
Well, we're resuming it, whether I'm ready or not. No, you know, I think it's a really good game. We've got some foundations, the Pat Summit Foundation being one of those that's going to benefit from this game, and I think we're doing it for the right reasons. I think there are a lot of Greek causes out there. There's a lot of talk about this game. It's been on folks' radar for several years now. Just when is it going to happen again? And I think it was just only a matter of time and natural that the series was going to start back up. So, I hope that it is as good for women's basketball as it used to be.
Coach, we really appreciate your time. Last thing, we'll let you run here. You have a fairly unique situation with your husband, John, being one of your assistants. I'm sure a lot of people ask you all the time, what's it like spending that much time with your spouse at work?
You know, the funny thing is, you'd be surprised at how much we do not see each other.
Okay.
We get up on different schedules. One of us is getting our kids to school, daycare, and we get in here, and I'm on my own schedule. He just came in here a few minutes ago, spoke to my administrative assistant, and asked if he could get a few minutes with me today. So I stay pretty busy. Then I'll be honest with you, we go home at night and we spend as much time as we can with our children. And, you know, a week will pass and we realize we haven't even talked. And so we have to start being a little bit more intentional about talking as spouses, because, you know, you work so hard, and then you just love your kids to death, and you want to spend so much time with them. And sometimes we take a back seat, but we love it. We love what we do, and we're appreciative that we can do that together.
Wow. Well, Coach, welcome back to Knoxville. We appreciate the time you joining us, and good luck getting this Lady Vol basketball program back up and rolling where it ought to be.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot.
Tennessee Lady Vol head coach Kelly Harper joining us on the show. We got to take a quick timeout. We'll be right back with more of The Drive this afternoon on Fox Sports Knoxville. Stay tuned. More Fan Run Radio coming up.
All right, back here on The Drive, Fox Sports Knoxville, coming to you live this afternoon from Old Ben Franklin Motors. And interesting conversation there with Kelly Harper.
Absolutely.
It's hard for me. I want to say Kelly Jolly or Kelly Jolly Harper so badly, but she goes by Kelly Harper. Several people were asking about that on Twitter, so got to start calling her by her name.
I was calling her Jolly Holly.
Jolly Holly. Well,
I mean,
that's
confusing.
That's confusing too, because we had a Holly Jolly coaching tree there. Thank you, folks. I'll be here all week.
Just come line up over here and just make jokes for everybody.
I think she'll be able to, quote-unquote, turn it around quickly. Because it's not like she's taking over a Jeremy Pruitt, you know, walking into Butch Jones's mess. We know they have talented players over there. Now, some of them transferred, and, you know, you're bringing in some new players and everything. I don't think they're immediately going to go back to top 10 level basketball, but I think they're going to be a solid top 25 team. I think they're going to be in the tournament and all those kinds of things. And I think Tennessee still to some level recruits itself, so I think, you know, she's going to get that, you know, honeymoon period, whatever you want to call it, year zero, and to kind of lay the foundation. But I think that they will be back pretty quickly.
Three years from now,
I mean,
making a Final Four Elite Eight appearance.
I mean, that's the standard here, isn't it?
Yes, you know, absolutely.
It's not even Elite Eights. It's fine. Make the Final Four. This is Tennessee Lady Vol basketball, and that should be the standard. So I don't know. I won't profess to be a, you know, expert in all things NCAA women's basketball, but it seems to me that the facilities and resources and the emphasis that Tennessee puts on that sport, that it's a priority at some level. And
Tennessee's got to get back to where Baylor, Notre Dame, UConn, Mississippi State even are right now.
They're going to be in that conversation. For sure.
They got passed by. Right. It's unfortunate they got passed by, but they got passed by, and now they have to get back to that level.
Yeah.
And once you do, then, you know, God, I wish they could have gone and got Vic Schaefer. That would have been nice. But I think Harper is going to do the job. I'm just saying, back then, during the search, it kind of seems like they were dead set on who they wanted to go after. And
I think that
– I don't blame them.
Yeah, you know, they definitely – I think there's a school of thought that they wanted to stay in the quote-unquote Lady Vol family. They did that. I mean, don't get much more in the family than Coach Harper. And you heard us talk about it in the interview. You know, Pat Summitt's legacy is still all around her office, the arena, the practice facility. You know, the statue is right there. So that's never going to change. I think that would have been very difficult for anybody, quote-unquote, outsider to come in and change.
But to be honest with you, buddy, I don't – until Tennessee gets – and I don't know how this is going to come off, and this is – I don't mean this in a mean way. I'm just trying to speak truth here. Until Tennessee women's basketball gets past the Pat Summitt stage and tries to make something on their own – do you know what I'm getting at here with this, where they
– You think they ought to just move on?
No, I don't think they should move on.
I mean, that's what Alabama had to do eventually. You know, they weren't going to be able to find, you know, all the Ray Perkins, Gene Stallings. I don't know, Gene Stallings did
Mike
win a national
Price,
championship.
Mike Shula, Franchoni,
but,
Dubose.
You know, Shula, all these guys from the quote-unquote Bear Alabama coaching tree. And eventually they had to just say, you know, to heck with it. We're just going to go get the best coach.
Right. So what I'm getting at is not move on from Pat Summitt, but –
I think it's too soon. I think it's just too early to do that. And hopefully you don't have to do that. I mean,
in selling the program type of way. Like, Tennessee should be able to sell the program. And I get that selling the program is Pat Summitt.
Yeah, her name is on the floor.
Right. But they also, this new coach, Harper, has got to be able to set her own precedent of how she's
sure.
going to run things and not just do it. Oh, you remember when Pat used to run it this way?
Well, I think that's
not always going to work. I mean, it didn't work for Warlick.
Exactly. I don't think, you know, it's always hard to be the person right after the legend.
Ask Konzo.
How do you follow Elvis? It's difficult to do. And I think that, you know, she's going to have, there's no way she can go forward. I mean, this will always be Pat Summitt's program.
Absolutely.
But that being said, is, you know, I asked her about it. You have to, on the one hand, embrace that, but on the other hand, carve out your own niche and create your own legacy. And that's going to take some time. She's a young coach, but we're pulling for her, man. Hopefully she can get that program back where it ought to be. 865-546-8200. We'll open up the phone lines here. 546-8200 if you want to jump in here this afternoon on The Drive. It's Fox Sports Knoxville talking about those NCAA transfer rule changes and how they might affect Tennessee. It'll be interesting to see if these changes do go into effect immediately and Tennessee is stuck in the unenviable position of going into the next season without Aubrey Solomon
yep.
and D'Angelo Gibbs. I wouldn't expect Pruitt to say anything about it because he's the coach. He's just a no-nonsense, put your head down, you know, work with what you got type of guy. But I wonder behind the scenes if he and or Coach Fulmer would have a strongly worded letter, memo, phone call, what have you, with the powers that be at the NCAA.
Word would get out pretty quick. They would make sure that story got out there.
And again, I don't think they would be the only ones. And I don't know who everybody else is waiting on to get eligible, but there's probably schools out there with a transfer just as big, if not bigger, than Aubrey Solomon that they're trying to get ready to go right away.
Did you see where DeAndre Francois is possibly going to go play at Alabama State? Think how far that's fallen.
I thought he was walking on at FAU.
Nope. Looks like he's going to go play at Alabama State.
Where is Alabama State? I don't even know what that is.
Montgomery, Alabama, down there with the Biscuits.
So is that like... NAIA, or is that, well, I mean, what level is that?
I think it's Division II. Division I? No, Division I. Alabama State's in the SWAC.
And this is not meant to be a shot. It's just the truth. I can't. There's been so many of these Florida State quarterbacks lately have gotten in. Was that a domestic violence thing that he got kicked out of school for?
Yeah, well, I think it was the pregnant girlfriend. And usually they go to FAU. Hell, that's where that Malik Henry kid was going to go, but now he's playing for Nevada.
Who was the Florida State quarterback before DeAndre Francois, who was on – it was the bar fight camera where he just cold-cocked that woman at a bar?
It's okay, so their quarterbacks have been – that was Malik Henry. I think it was Malik Henry.
Oh, was it?
I think it was Malik Henry. I want to say it was Malik Henry.
I mean, it's –
because Malik Henry was the one that was on Last Chance U.
I want to say it was like Johnson or something. I mean, isn't it sad, though, that
I'm going to go to the desk.
Isn't it sad that we're sitting here, though? There are multiple guys to choose from, and we get them mixed up.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Florida State hasn't had a balanced quarterback in a while.
You mean like mentally balanced?
Yeah, I mean that, too. I mean, he began his career at Florida State. He was also kicked out of IMG Academy, too. Damn. Wow, Malik Henry.
Yeah, it seems like a bad problem to have. All right, coming up here, we will go back to the Fan Run Studios. Parker Pewitt will have the top four at four. We'll get you caught up on what's going on elsewhere in your world of sports. We've got Aaron Torres coming on the show next hour.
Congratulations to the Big East.
Getting UConn back.
Oh, my God. That's going to be a train wreck. It's like, yeah, you know what? We want basketball back in the Big East. But you know about that football program over there Randy Ansel's running?
Yeah. Do they even have football in the Big East?
I want to say yeah, but it's like division. No. No, they don't.
I don't think they do.
No, they don't.
Could they go like independent?
I was thinking of all – yeah, that's what they're going to have to do.
They're just
going to
be an independent football
program. Because the AAC was like, yeah, you're not going to just have football and not have basketball. So, yeah. Now they're going to have to probably go independent.
Huh.
They're screwed. Doesn't Tennessee play UConn in the next couple years? Or did they buy out of that series?
In women's basketball?
No, man, football.
We did have something. There was something on the schedule.
Did we buy out of that?
I don't know if they bought out of it, or if it's just one of those things that the deal was never consummated or something like that. We'll look that up here during the break. Quick timeout, hour number two of The Drive on Deck. Stay with us. It's Fox Sports Knoxville live today. Open Franklin Motors right here on Fan Run Radio.